Okay, my topic of my talk, you see, the blackboard is a quotation, actually, the queer resemblance between a philosophical investigation and an aesthetic one, Wittgenstein and the sciences. And what I'm going to do is I want to find out what does Wittgenstein mean by the aesthetical, and what is the resemblance between, why does he call philosophy, the work of philosophy, an aesthetical investigation. So what I'm going to do is, first, what does Wittgenstein mean by the aesthetical? Second, how does he distinguish scientific explanations from philosophical descriptions? And third, and very short, only very short, how does this connect to the claim that philosophy is a form of life, or as he says in Culture and Value, a working on oneself? Okay. The received interpretation of Wittgenstein has it that aesthetics is only on the periphery of his philosophical concerns. Because as one of the alleged founders of analytic philosophy, Wittgenstein is supposed to have championed a scientific philosophy. For instance, we have this nice quote by Hans-Joachim Klock: aesthetics did not lie at the center of Wittgenstein's philosophical interest, but art, especially music, had a paramount place in his life. But note the difference here made by Klock between Wittgenstein's philosophy and his life. Yeah, right? And I think that this is the wrong difference, the wrong opposition. You cannot separate. Wittgenstein didn't separate life from the stuff he did in philosophy. And there are some more quotations where Wittgenstein defines his relationship to science, to scientific questions, which all point in another direction than the direction taken by the received interpretation of Wittgenstein as a scientific philosopher. For instance, he says, I may find scientific questions interesting, but they never really grip me. Only conceptual and aesthetic questions have that effect on me. At bottom, it leaves me cold whether scientific problems are solved, but not those other questions. It's quite a strong pronouncement. Or I didn't find the English translation. This is ein irritierender Unsinn. So this is a irritating nonsense, because it is supposed, or it is claimed, that philosophy be any of the sciences. Right? Or this is quite famous. I believe I summed up where I stand in relation to philosophy when I said, really, one should write philosophy only as one writes a poem. And of course, the question is, because Wittgenstein obviously didn't write poems, right? But sort of philosophy, what does he actually mean when he doesn't mean, he cannot mean that in philosophy you write novels or plays or poems. So this is part of my question. What does he mean by relating philosophy to the literary or the aesthetical? Okay, what does Wittgenstein mean by the aesthetical? Another quote. He writes that, before I give you the quote, I summarize this myself. Aesthetical investigations, they are not only connected to the question of the beauty, the beautiful, or the sublime in classical philosophical aesthetics, but aesthetical investigations are opposed by Wittgenstein to naming or finding out causal connections. Because the reason for this is that an aesthetic puzzle is not answered by offering a causal hypothesis. So he writes, in aesthetic investigation, the thing we are not interested in is causal connections, whereas in psychology we are. This is the main point of difference. To name causal connections is to give an hypothesis. Giving a cause does not remove the aesthetic puzzle one feels when asked what makes a thing beautiful. So the context here is the question, the classical question, what makes a thing beautiful? But the definition already of the aesthetic already points to a wider context, which I'm going to come in a second to. For instance, the questions, an example for an aesthetic puzzle would be, why am I impressed by this picture, right? Why are we, or at least the people at the time of Wittgenstein, why are they very impressed, fascinated by the descriptions they found in Fraser's The Golden Bow? Yeah, why were they fascinated? Also, why do you think this is beautiful, and why do you think why does this strike me as ugly? These are examples for aesthetic questions, and these questions are, according to Wittgenstein, not answered by giving you a causal hypothesis. In the contrary, what removes the aesthetic puzzle are not causal hypotheses, but perspicuous representations, or as he sometimes calls them, synoptic overviews, synopsis, or in German, übersichtliche Darstellung. The Anscombe translation, perspicuous representations, is a bit unhappy. I'm going to say a bit more at the end of the lecture about this. Perspicuous representations, here just the famous paragraph 122. The concept of a perspicuous representation is of fundamental significance for us. It earmarks the form of account we give the way we look at things. I'm going to say more about perspicuous, the structure of perspicuous representation in a minute. But just to give you an idea, most of you probably know this anyway, they work, the conspicuous representations work by finding intermediate cases, Zwischenglieder, or so far unnoticed, or even by inventing them. Yeah. So note that it also includes inventions in the construction of perspicuous representations. Now, for Wittgenstein, the aesthetical, that's the interesting point, the aesthetical not only covers the classical field of the beautiful, for the sublime, yeah? But also the psychoanalysis, the descriptions Freud, or the explanations, the alleged explanations Freud gives. Also anthropology, the alleged causal hypothesis Fraser puts forward, are for Wittgenstein, if they do make sense at all, they can only be taken seriously as perspicuous representations. Darwin, he includes, especially Darwin's book, the expression of the emotions in men and animals, of 1872 in the Philosophical Occasions. This is, I think, what the Moore lecture. He explicitly discusses Darwin and includes him in someone who gives constructed perspicuous representations. Even in mathematics, the famous statement in the remarks on the foundations of mathematics runs like mathematical proofs have to be übersichtlich, have to be perspicuous, or whatever. There are some more quotes in the places in the remarks on the foundations of mathematics where he talks about the claims that mathematical proofs are perspicuous representations, and of course philosophy. So as you see, he uses the concept of aesthetical in a very broad sense, and the common element of all these is that all those subjects use, strictly speaking, perspicuous representations. I give you a quote, in case you don't believe me, where he brings together at least three of those. Why does this impress us? That's in the context of discussion of Fraser's Golden Bow. Why does this impress us is like the aesthetic question, why is this beautiful, or getting to know the reason why you love. Now you have, we have anthropology, Fraser, we have philosophy, the aesthetics, and we have Freud. Yeah, so according to Wittgenstein, what is good in Freud is, what he likes in Freud is that he makes nice constructs, nice perspicuous representations. Also Freud, of course, thought of his project differently, than he, depending on his mood, that he was actually in the business of the scientific psychology, giving causal explanation for human behavior. Okay, summary so far. For Wittgenstein, philosophical problems are of the same nature as problems of taste and beauty, psychoanalytical, anthropological, and even mathematical problems. The starting point is an affective response, perhaps not in mathematics. Just forget about the mathematics. The starting point is an affective response to a situation not understood, a puzzlement, a mental uneasiness, as he says in the philosophical occasions. I don't know my way around, a cognitive dissonance. For instance, as I said, why am I fascinated by Fraser's stories? Why are we, his example is Fraser describes the fire festivals in which still are held in the border of Scotland, near of Edinburgh, the fire festivals. The John, we say Sunland fire, where you celebrate the turning of the sun, right? And there in this fire festival, they make a huge fire and they symbolically burn a puppet, a straw man, yeah. And Fraser puts forward the hypothesis, the causal, as he says, or historical hypothesis that hundreds of years ago, a real man or real woman was burned. And Wittgenstein says, this hypothesis, because it's so uncertain whether it really happens, this hypothesis doesn't explain, because of its uncertainty, the fascination we have, we, at least people, time of Wittgenstein, reading about this fire festival. And what he says is instead is that it's the sheer possibility that there really was somebody burned, yeah, which explains explains our fascinations with this festival. So why are we fascinated by Fraser's stories? Why does this picture of Manet, for instance, struck me more than this Picasso? Why can't I stop thinking about this philosophical problem? As you know, Wittgenstein couldn't stop. He wanted to stop, but he couldn't stop thinking about philosophy. And all those questions, they are not answered by giving scientific hypotheses or causal explanations, but they are answered by giving perspicuous representations. What they have in common is that they are not scientific problems, are not answered by causal explanations, but by perspicuous representations. Now, I will turn to six characteristics of perspicuous representations, and then discuss them, and then we'll oppose them to, or compare them to properties of scientific explanations, to make clearer that there is, for instance, Wittgenstein, there is even an opposition between constructing perspicuous representations and putting forward causal explanations. First, what is the motivation and what is the subject matter of a perspicuous representation? What motivates constructing a perspicuous overview is marked by, as I said, a philosophical problem of the form I don't know my way about. Ich kenne mich nicht aus, in German. Or by feeling of a vague mental uneasiness or intellectual discomfort, as he calls it in the Moore lecture. That's the starting point of motivation, which, as you see, is already a very subjective one. Not everybody reacts in the same way to the same situation, right? It's very very subjective personal starting point. Now, the subject matter can be some puzzling aspect of the use of certain words. Use of certain words, that's the context where it's in Philosophical Investigations, 122. The perspicuous representations are introduced. But not only the aspect of the uncertainty in how to use certain words in philosophy, but also mathematical proofs, magical rites, religious ceremonies, and dreams, as in Wittgenstein's reading of Fraser's The Golden Bough and Freud's interpretation of dreams. And it's, by the way, it's in the context of, I think, 30 or 31, the context of Wittgenstein's remarks on James Fraser's The Golden Bough, that the concept of übersichtliche Darstellung appears for the first time. Where he criticizes Fraser of misunderstanding what he is doing. Fraser thought, of course, of himself as a scientist, but Wittgenstein points out that all he does is coming forward with more less or good perspicuous representations. Okay, we had the motivation and the subject matter. Now the second is the procedure. How do they proceed? This we already had. A perspicuous representation proceeds by finding intermediate cases, Zwischenglieder, so far unnoticed, or by inventing them. To give an example, again from his reading of Fraser. You know, Fraser treats all those different customs and rites on the same level as explanations and description in physics, with the main difference that they are false for Fraser, superstitious, and. For instance, that people jump around because they think it brings rain. This is one of Fraser's examples. And Wittgenstein says if we won't understand a foreign custom, the best way is to find links to our own customs in that connection. For instance, when we people thought that in trees and in wood. There were living little spirits, right? And therefore, you had to treat trees and wood in a certain way—a way which would respect the presence of these little tree spirits. And Fraser makes fun of this, and Wittgenstein says, "Just think of our habit of knocking on wood, right? You knock on wood three times, and for luck." It's quite a common, at least in Austria. My wife does it all the time. And you have to look for proper wood. So plastic doesn't do, right? Okay, my wife, I think, is quite a rational person. She's an academic and so on. And why does she do it? And this making this connection to a foreign, very foreign, strange custom to what we do may help us to solve a puzzle, or to solve our puzzle in that case, right? And of course, it's a custom which is kind of residual, because nobody actually, not most of the people who knock on wood, they don't know anything about the development of this practice. That they really, in other times, you knocked on wood because you wanted to wake up the little spirits. You didn't want to shock them, right? So you knock on wood. Anyway, so this would be an example of finding a Zwischenglied, of finding intermediate case. Procedure. Yeah, we have procedure. This okay. Now the next one, I called only connect. Or you could also say reminders. That's now the interesting, perhaps more interesting part. Contrary to empirical accounts, a perspicuous representation does not come up with new pieces of information, says Wittgenstein, or with discoveries or hypotheses, but has the character of reminding somebody of something which has been there all the time. Right? The work of the philosopher, he says, consists in assembling reminders for a particular purpose. So you remind, by making this connection, you remind yourself, or by finding this connection, you're reminding yourself or others of something which has been already there, but you didn't notice it, and just by making the connection, it appears, so to speak. Right? Only connect, by the way, is it's the would be a nice question for students. Yeah, you know
Forster,
it.
Forster, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It's the epitaph or the motto of. I think Howard's End. Yeah.
Howard's End.
Howard's End. Yeah. And the interesting thing is that, you know, Forster was close to the Bloomsbury group, and I read by, it's not my, I'm afraid I didn't find it myself, but I read in Rosenbaum, Rosenbaum is a Canadian, we had him in Kirchberg a long time ago, Canadian historian, especially of the Bloomsbury movement. And he in his opening lecture on the Wittgenstein conference, he pointed out that Only Connect was a kind of motto in that time, 1920s, 30s, in the circuits, intellectual circuits in London and Oxford. And it may be that Wittgenstein was influenced by, when he came up with the idea of the speaker's representations, which only connects, right? By this slogan, only connect. Forster means connecting the different social classes, like working class and intellectuals, by the only connect. So it's not the same meaning, but at least the idea. Okay, so the next one, yeah, a perspicuous representation is a form of understanding and knowing more by arranging and connecting things already there. Of course, you learn more. You're finding out things, but you're not finding out like in scientific. In scientific discovery, things which nobody had known before, which are really new for us. But from your personal standpoint of view, you should end up by knowing more, just by arranging things which have been already there unnoticed. Moore reports in Wittgenstein's lectures that Wittgenstein also said that he was not trying to teach us any new facts, that he would only tell us trivial things, things which we all know already, but the difficult thing was to get a synopsis, an overview of these trivialities, make the right connections. The next characteristics I want to distinguish, I want to point out of the speaker's representations is that the importance of agreement. Being perspicuous is not an intrinsic property of a representation or of a description. It's dependent on being acknowledged by the person addressed by it. That's very important, and that's the main, perhaps the main distinction between perspicuous representations and scientific explanations. Yeah. Being acknowledged by the person by it as something which makes things clear and satisfies her. This is a nice quote. I've forgotten to put the page number in from the Cambridge lectures. This is the second volume edited by Ambrose, I think. The success of the analysis is supposed to be shown by the person's agreement. He is talking about psychoanalysis, right, Forster. There's nothing corresponding to this in physics. Of course, we can give causes for your laughter, but whether those are in fact the causes is not shown by the person's agreement that they are. The cause is found experimentally. The psychoanalytic way of finding why a person laughs is analogous to an aesthetic investigation. For the correctness of an aesthetic analysis must be agreement of the person to whom the analysis is given. And yes, he extends this to philosophical explanations as well. Now, Wittgenstein even draws the distinction between reason and causes in terms of agreement in the next quotation. The difference between a reason and a cause is brought out as follows. The investigation of a reason entails as an essential part of one's agreement with it, whereas the investigation of a cause is carried out experimentally. So even the distinction between reason and it's an important distinction between reason and causes is defined in terms of the agreement of the addressee of the investigation. Good. The fifth characteristics is justification. As for justification, perspicuous representations are on the same level as the puzzle cases they make perspicuous. They show other contrasting but coherent ways of seeing things and thereby make one realize that one has always been dealing with forms of representation things, with forms of representing things, like traumata, and not by not the things themselves. Yeah? So offering perspicuous representation, you don't leave the level of the puzzlement you started with. You're not as in scientific explanation very often you're not try to reduce the level to another level or whatever. You're still moving within. As I said here, forms of representing things and not the things themselves. And one of the mistakes Wittgenstein criticizes is that people mix up their ways of how to represent things with the things themselves. In philosophy, especially. Somewhere here. Some of you know philosophical investigations by heart. There's a paragraph. The sixth characteristic I called local. Perspicuous representation responds to a local problem. It does not abstract from the particular contextual, historical, or psychological relations the subject has to its object. The object she is puzzled by, for instance, but tries to make this relation clear in order to show how the way the object is represented is constituted by this particular relation. So the object, so to speak, only appears with this meaning by placing it in a perspicuous representation. Or to put it in other terms, the subject of knowledge is not a universal subject standing in a detached relation to an equally detached object. It's not a classical Cartesian philosophical subject. The subjectivity, if you wish, the individuality, the personality of the subject, which is addressed by perspicuous representation. Stays as an essential part of the whole business, if only because her or his agreement is asked, agreement to the explanation offered. Okay, we had six. I'll repeat them later. They're much to perspicuous representations. I now turn shortly to characteristics of scientific explanations, which more or less are the negation of the explanations of the characteristics of perspicuous representations I gave you. Scientific explanations give us hypotheses and assumptions that are uncertain. It's because they are empirical, right? So they're based on experience. So that therefore they are. They are uncertain and they are empirical, that is, they contain new informations, and therefore they are uncertain. They are most of the time, very often, at least the ones Wittgenstein that had dealings with, are reductive, that is, they usually explain the phenomenon in question in terms of another, often for the subject hidden level. I mean, think of Frege, Frege probably also, of Freud, Fregischer, Freudscher Versprecher. Of Freud, in his scientific mood, he would say the consciousness is a symptom of the unconsciousness, and as far as we are conscious, our thoughts, our expectations, our projects, our plans, our partner, the partners we choose, has to be explained by relating these things to another level, namely the unconsciousness. In the case, he reduces consciousness to another level, the unconsciousness, which is not, of course, which is hidden to the subject in question and only known, partly known, by the psychoanalysis. They offer causes, not reasons, tentative explanations. They are objective, that is, that truth must be independent of agreement or disagreement of their addressees. It's not a question whether they could be independent, whether they could be independent of the agreement of the whole community. That's another question. But whether a physical experiment or physical hypothesis makes sense, is accepted as being true, is not dependent on the agreement of, for instance, of the guy who developed it and the people who first heard about it, right? Objectivity means being independent in a certain sense of most of the subjects involved. Now, okay, perspicuous representations versus scientific explanations. Because of P3 to P6, the characteristics distinguished, perspicuous representations are not scientific if scientific means giving causal explanations, where cause and effect, subject and object, past and present, are independent of one another, and acceptance cannot be essential for the correctness of explanations. And Wittgenstein, at least, he treats scientific explanations, he conflates them, so to speak, as giving causal explanations. Now, I think, so to speak, a step further, you could perhaps better understand what's going on by giving perspicuous representations, linking them to the concept of the performative. I think that they are performative in the sense that they constitute they constitute what they connect. Yeah. So the object which you're responding strongly to a situation, you don't know what's going on, you end up with a ideally you end up with perspicuous representations connecting things in that way that your puzzle is removed, and at the same time what is constituted is a situation which you understand now, for instance. And I think this is a kind of constitutive connection, or if you wish, a performative connection. Performative is in the sense of taking by Austin, creating things or meanings. You're not creating things; you're creating meanings by doing something. Speaking in the case of Austin, but connecting whatever. Perspicuous representations do not present something that exists self-identically and objectively before it is made perspicuous, I would claim. Rather, making a case perspicuous at the same time constitutes it as having a certain meaning and coherence. It is this constitutive relation between something that happened earlier, for instance, the puzzling object or the puzzling experience, and something that happens later that is achieved by perspicuous representation. Yeah, hence, because of this performativity aspect, or constitutive aspect of perspicuous representation, Anscombe's translation of Darstellung by representation, I think, is misleading, as so many translations by Ms. Anscombe of the philosophical investigations, as you probably better know than I. Insofar as it suggests that there is an identity or presence waiting to be recovered, represented, by Bespighi's representation. And Wittgenstein, of course, dismisses this regime of representation in any of its forms. In addition, Darstellung has an active connotation, stressing that something is done, carried out, dargestellt, or performed by an agent. Another point I've forgotten to put in here, perspicuous is also not übersichtlich. In English, I think in English there is no adjective for übersichtlich. Surveyability would be a noun, I don't know. Here ends my manuscript, as I see. I just wanted to say one more thing. If you remember this, the quotation at the beginning, I should find it, where Wittgenstein says, philosophy, doing philosophy is more like working on oneself. Yeah, working in philosophy is like working in architecture. And note the connection again with aesthetics. Architecture is a part of, but it has a very strong aesthetic aspect. Working in philosophy is like working in architecture, really more working on oneself, on one's own interpretation, on one's own way of seeing things. And I think that coming up with Perspicuous representations is an essential part of this working on one's own interpretations for Wittgenstein. So in that sense, philosophy as a form of life, this is probably a bit unhappy. It took this formulation, philosophy as a form of life, from Adot, the French philosopher. I don't know whether you know him. You heard about. In relation with Foucault's later writings, he wrote about philosophy as a form of life, in Greek philosophy especially. Right? So it's not philosophy in the form of life in the sense of Wittgenstein, I don't think so. But anyway, it's thought that philosophy is working on oneself, that's the idea. And not a theoretical scientific enterprise. Okay, one essential part of this is, as I said, changing. Wittgenstein very often, especially in Culture and Value, stresses the point that it's very important to change in your philosophical life. And one of his other critiques in Culture and Value of the scientific stance, the scientific attitude, is that science is conservative, as he says. It follows another picture by him. It follows fixed rails, right? And this he doesn't want to have in philosophy. In philosophy, you have to keep on the move. You have to keep on your toes, working on oneself. And I mean, this probably is one. This probably helps one to explain why Wittgenstein, for instance, reacted so hostile to the 29 pamphlet of the Vienna Circle. You know, the wissenschaftliche Weltanschauung presented to Carnap by the members because he, not to Carnap, to Schlick, because he stayed in Vienna and didn't take up a chair in Berlin, would have saved his life, but he stayed on in Vienna. And Wittgenstein was very, and this is kind of Kampfschrift, the pamphlet, putting forward the concept of the wissenschaftliche Weltanschauung, scientific worldview, and he was very cynical and hostile about this whole, about the little book, but also about the whole enterprise of the scientific philosophy. Okay, those were nice last words, so I'll stop.